extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. Welcome, Michael LaHood. It is your 2022 MLS Super Draft presented by Adidas Preview Show. Hope you're having a great Monday, everybody. A reminder in case you somehow forgot, as I tweeted it or said it a million times on Friday's podcast, Tuesday, January 11th, tomorrow, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook, the MLS Super Draft. In my mind, the official kickoff to the MLS season. Training camps start right afterwards. Coverage starts at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be on the desk with Michael and Devin Kerr. We'll have Doyle adding his thoughts from the armchair analyst's den. We'll have David. Where are you going to be? You're going to be in Durham,
maybe.
I think? Yeah.
No, Blue Devils. What's the chant? Does anyone
Yeah, nobody
Michael,
knows.
Do you know any?
Michael, you have any idea?
For the Blue Devils chant?
Yeah, big Duke guy, right?
Oh, yeah. Right? I think it goes, we all hate Dukies. We all hate
Oh, man. Wake Forest grad here and, of course, a former first-round draft pick in the Super Draft. Jillian Sakovic is going to be on location. I think she's in Cincinnati. In Charlotte, who have the number one overall pick, of course, coming to the league, making it 28 teams. We have got Katie Witham. Celia Goodwin, I believe, is going to be. Am I spacing, Dave? You seem to know the details better.
With Useni Buda, I believe.
Yeah, Generation Adidas signing. There are 8 Generation Adidas signings this year. More info on them on MLSsoccer.com. If you want it, we're also going to introduce you to them later in the show. We're going to run you through college soccer in this draft class in general. What should people expect from this group of player? What is the state of college soccer right now? We're going to go through that Generation Adidas class, the top prospects. St. Louis could have 4 first-round draft picks. That's a big story, a little Akron light there for them. Big West African influence that Michael will guide you through. We're going to try to identify the player we think is going to be the big hit or the solid pick or the guy that in 3 years we're all like, yes, that was a good draft pick. He's an MLS starter. Maybe he's even a Darryl DK. On the top end and being transferred for millions of dollars. We'll have a sleeper pick for you. We'll talk MLS Next Pro, and we will give you our 5-a-side all-time Super Draft teams at the very end. Let's jump into it. Let's do this. And I just want to hear about your experience, Michael. Now a full decade plus ago, the prestigious club that will live on in history forever, Chivas USA, used the 9th overall selection on a player out of Wake Forest named Michael LaHood, who is now with us on the show. What was that like for you? The lead up to that, the day itself, did you get a phone call? Were you in person at the draft? How did that go down?
So my story is one that your life can change in just a matter of weeks. Prior to the draft, we just finished up the Final Four. We had a disappointing result, losing to University of North Carolina, and it was in Briscoe at their stadium. And so I went home, and for Christmas, I got one of the greatest Christmas gifts ever, which was a professional contract. MLS reached out, put it in the postage, got it to my house, and I signed. And no one told me what the process was going to be like, about the combine, about the draft. So I was just following the yellow brick road, ended up getting plane tickets to Fort Lauderdale, and showed up. And the beauty of a combine is it reminds you of playing pickup. And pickup was a big part of my career as a kid. And even when I was in college, I would always find pickup games in the off season. So I felt right at home, did well, and probably some of the best soccer I'd played up through college, and did well enough to move up the boards and become a first round draft pick. Had no clue who's going to take me. It could have been anyone in the league, but I just wanted
even Chivas USA.
Especially Chivas USA, because that's who they took me. Shout out to them. They're so good, they don't exist anymore.
Oh, man. What did you feel when you were drafted? Like, who did you share that moment with? What was that day like?
I remember it so well. It was in St. Louis, and St. Louis in January is not a place that you want to be in terms of weather-wise. It's blistering cold, but there's such nostalgia there. I know we're going to get into that later in the show, but I was there with my dad, and we were in a hotel. I'd never stayed in a hotel that nice before. And I remember there are things that you get access to being in a room, a suite, putting on a blazer. It's been a long time since I put on a blazer. And you walk down and you're sitting in the convention center hall. And I remember, you know, Commissioner Don Garber is going through and you're hearing people's names called, players you played against. In my draft class, it was Omar Gonzalez, familiar names, one Matt Beasler, who recently retired. So shout out to him on a brilliant career. And then there's a moment that hits you where you just feel it in your gut that I think they're about to call my name. And before they called my name, I remember Preki, who's the assistant at Seattle now, but he was my head coach at Chivas. Preki called the timeout and he looked my direction. And I remember his staff members, Carlos Somoza, who's with Giovanni Savarese, they all looked at me and they were whispering in his ear. And I was thinking, ah, crap, I hope they're not talking about my suit game. Is my hair looking good?
It's the first time I've worn a blazer in years, yeah, guys. Exactly. Like, I'm not a blazer guy.
And then they nod their head and then hand the pick in. And, you know, Commissioner Garber said my name. And in a moment, it's almost like you don't even realize that your name's been called. I didn't even react at first. And then everything was a blur. I remember hugging my dad and going up there. And this was the era where you could give a speech if you're a first round draft pick. So I couldn't tell you what I said. I had an old school moment. So I drank water and then blurted something out. But I felt good about it and got off the podium. And in the blink of an eye, you're a professional soccer player and you're getting interviewed on ESPN, national TV. So that was my experience.
I just want to, for all us nerds out there who are like, okay, 2009 MLS Super Draft, Steve Zakuani was the number one overall pick. Sam Cronin, two, to Toronto. Omar Gonzalez to the Galaxy. O'Brien White, UConn grad.
Huskies.
Special place in Doyle's heart. Fourth overall to Toronto. Perry Maricevich out of Michigan to Dallas. Rodney Wallace, Chris Pontius, Matt Beasler, and then right there, our own Michael LaHoud, that's followed by Kevin Alston.
Maricevich had scored all those 20.
Stephen Fry was at 13 here.
Yeah.
George John, 14th overall.
It's a good
so, game. AJ De La Garza in the second round. Bajie Husidic. This was Graham Zusi was a second rounder in this one.
Yeah.
This was a legit draft, man. Yeah. Quincy Ameriqua on down. I mean, there were some names. So that's Michael's experience.
Michael,
and another,
who was the best player besides you at Combine that year?
I could tell you, to be honest,
they're so far off him. Yeah.
To be honest, I thought I was the best player.
Okay.
I knew going in, and that it's you know that you did a good job at an event or a combine when it's hard to name another player. And it's true. I remember going in there and I was thinking, I'm fighting for my life here. So, hey,
I don't even remember the rest of these scrubs. Who was even there?
I don't. I remember the guys we named. And Graham Susie was on my team. I do remember that. And I'd known Graham. We had mutual friends. My college roommate actually went to high school with him and played club soccer. And so knew Graham. But I felt that this was my chance, and I was so locked in. So that's a great question. It was me.
who was the top guy you saw at the Combine this year? And things have changed. Look, there's no longer that draft stage, whether it be because of a pandemic that's obviously currently ongoing or otherwise. This will all be done sort of virtually, and then via the stream, we will announce the picks. They'll have interviews. We'll have live camera shots of a ton of these guys. So if you're thinking, how do I follow this? What's the best way? I can just tell you right now, 1,000%, it is going to be that Super Draft stream that you can watch on MLS channels. We have cameras literally all over the country, correspondents in multiple markets, interviews, breaking news always happens during the draft. That's where you're going to want to be. But you went to the Combine, which is no longer in Fort Lauderdale, which is no longer or in LA as it was in recent years. This in-person, like, hotel lobby, watch games all day, watch, like, you know, GMs and head coaches meander around a random stadium event as it was. But what did you see in the Combine this year, and what do you make of this overall draft class, Michael?
It was such a different experience of the Combine through the lens of watching the players. Number one, the Combine was held while the Final Four was going on. In years past, the Combine is held after the New Year. You have some time to get away from the NCAA season, get refreshed, and give it your all to really stake your claim to a position at the next level. Well, this year, guys had only been removed, some guys a week, some guys a couple days. some guys on the teams didn't have good seasons. They've been out for a month. So I saw a lot of guys who were tired. And the guys that really stood out were the guys that had taken care of their bodies. And there was everything. One day it was sunny. The next day it was raining. It felt like you were playing on a rainy day in Stoke. So you really got to be up for it to be out there to be competing for a position. But a lot of the international guys stuck out to me more than the domestic guys. I think of the two Marshall players, Pedro Dalabella and Victor Diaz. They stood out. More so, Victor Diaz stood out. He scored a beautiful goal, or had a hand in another couple goals. He was at the heart of things quite a bit. But really, this draft class, when I think of the combine, the center backs and defenders stood out. It's a defender-heavy class.
We had a lot of people hitting us up here as I asked for questions for the show. And by the way, if you're confused now, if you think we missed some news, if you're like, wait, that's old news, we're recording this on Friday, releasing it Monday morning. Basically, the question is, as it always is, Doyle, and I'll throw this one to you, is how relevant is the MLS Super Draft in the year 2022? Like, we have the academies, we have this pathway to pro that's being built, you have MLS Next Pro that is coming in this season, and inevitably you'll see some of these players play at that level. And just to give you an example, just like John Bell did and then made the jump to the Revs, they want to know, why should I still care? Can teams be impacted, my team, by this draft mechanism?
Yes. That said, if you blow off the draft entirely, like Philadelphia does every year, you can be fine, provided that you have... Go ahead.
That's not fair, though, because their starting center back is a draft pick, and their starting goalkeeper.
As is their starting goalkeeper, and I don't think that they should be blowing off the draft every year, but like they have proved that they are able to replace, you know, the sort of assets that they find in the draft via the academy. And that's what Ernst Tanner has said. He's like, when it comes to those developmental minutes, and every draft pick is developmental, no matter how ready you are, your developmental player, if you're coming through the draft. And Ernst Tanner has said, I would rather give those minutes to academy kids. And that is fine. I don't think I would ever, if I was a GM, be like, no, we don't want to use this talent acquisition method. And the example of that is the New England Revolution. Like, their entire starting back line came through the super draft. And, you know, Andrew Farrell was the first or second pick when he was taken a decade ago, but the rest of them were guys who were down around, you know, I think Kessler was sixth, DeJuan Jones might have been 10th, Brandon Bye around 11th. There as well.
Eighth for Brandon Bye.
And you know, Tajon Buchanan, he was a starter as well. He came through the super draft. I think he was seventh or eighth, and they just sold him for $7 million. So it's still relevant if you want to put the time and effort in to, you know, do the work to scout the players. And then once you get the players, very few of them are going to be able to jump directly from college into the MLS first team and make significant contributions. We have to start thinking of the super draft the way we think of, like, the Major League Baseball draft or the NHL draft, where most players, the vast, vast majority of players, will spend a year or two developing at a lower level before they can make an impact in the top tier. It's not like the NBA draft, and it's not like the NFL draft, where, you know, dozens of guys come in and are immediately playing at the highest level. And the super draft used to be like that. It's just, it's not that anymore. That doesn't mean it's worthless, though. I like, especially, like, look, do I even need to make this case? Tajon Buchanan was sold for $7 million to a Champions League team. Daryl Dike was just sold for $9.5-$10 million to West Brom, who will probably be playing in the Premier League next year. Like, we see a ton of guys on the U.S. national team and the Canadian national team who came through the super draft. Like, the case is being made constantly by these guys, but it is not the bedrock roster developmental tool it was a dozen years ago. And that's fine. That is progress for this league and for soccer in the U.S. and Canada.
It's not a volume play. Like, you're not going to watch this whole first round and think there are 28 guys right there that are going to impact rosters. But if you look back at the history of the super draft and what I'm calling the modern era from basically 2015 on, and that's completely arbitrary, I just decided.
No, that's the TAM era. It really is the TAM era.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That is the TAM era. So I just, by pure luck and instinct, I hit that on the nail on the head. I did not include 2021. because it is, as you said, developmental. We really just have Danny Pereira, who is number one, and then Javane Brown, who's made impacts at the first team level so far. And then like three or four guys that played 400 minutes and were sort of like fill in during injuries, or you're an impact sub when we need you. Those guys, you hope there are more to come from that. But 2020, Robbie Robinson, Chile international. Daryl Dike sold for $9.5 million. You just said Henry Kessler. Alistair Johnson, who, you know, that Michael was here just biting his tongue trying to jump in there for his wake guy, who just got sold within MLS for $1 million. Nkosi Tafari is going to be a starting center back who just got a new deal. Miguel Berry's off my top five in 2019. DeJuan Jones. Chase Gasper is going to be a left back starting in this league for a long time. Sean Nealis was 25th overall, and Kamal Miller was 27th. They were second round draft picks who are, for one of them, a starting international player and one of the better center backs in the league. And the other one, not an international, but one of the better center backs in the league now as he's developed within the Red Bull system. Like Brian White, draft pick in 2018. So was Alex Roldan late in the first round. There, Miles Robinson, you go on and on. There's talent here. It's just not necessarily a volume play. Dave, any thoughts on just college soccer, this class, what the super draft can be before we start to introduce people to the nitty gritty, to the actual players you're going to see on the board on Tuesday?
Yeah, I cover youth development in this country a lot, or this region, and people ask me all the time, what's the place of college soccer? What's the place of the super draft? This area is too large for every player to be scouted by the time they are 13 or 15 or 17 or 18. And that's not an indictment on scouting. That's not an indictment on the structure. That's just a reality of geography and population. And so to Doyle's point, there are players here. There will always be players here. It's your job to identify them. It's your job to create structure for them to be successful. A lot of the guys you named didn't play the same position, don't play the same position at the pro level as they did at the college level. So how do you read players? How do you see their tendencies of what they can be? And then how do you create a two team where they can play at that position? And how do you look at their, you know, what their attributes are and say, this is what fits our system. This is how this player can be good. There is talent here. And the other part is not just that there's talent here. With the way MLS salary caps are structured, if you can get players who are difference makers in the draft, it opens up the ability to sign high-level international players at attacking positions or former national team players, whatever it is. There's a reason when you look at great teams that they had to get good players out of drafts. And when you look at the Fast Supporter Shield, Doyle mentioned New England. I go back to TFC. Having Bono in goal as a GA guy allows you to spend on the back line and allows you to spend up the field. And then you look at LAFC and what they were able to, and all the teams since then, Atlanta United. Everyone wants to talk about how high spending they are. Julian Gressel and Miles Robinson were starters for them. You need those players to be good in this league. And if they're not coming through your academy, they can come through the draft.
All right. Remember, Tuesday, Super Draft coverage starts 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. MLSsoccer.com, MLS app, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. The draft will start at 3 p.m. Eastern. Let's dive into some of the nitty-gritty. I think we can start with the Generation Adidas class because you know they're going to be at a premium for the salary cap reasons that you mentioned there, Dave, and also because MLS has looked at those players. Teams have been asked, where do you see him? Would you select him? They say, yes, we would. And then before their senior year, they can be signed and usually at a more guaranteed number, more money for those players as well and better cap mechanisms. Otherwise, who's the best prospect in the GA class for you, Michael? Who's the guy that you just circle off the top and say, I think he's the best player, or that you think is going to go number one? Sometimes those aren't always the same things.
I got to watch this player in more of highlight packages than actually calling his game and meeting him in person at the combine. There's just something different about him. He was all business, and I never thought I'd be praising a Dookie, and the rivalries of college soccer go deep. But Thor Ofelsen, I think he's a guy that he just has a ruthlessness about him. And as he went this year, the Duke Blue Devils went and they had a resurgent year in college soccer. And he was the primary reason. And there were younger players around him that helped. But I really like the upside of his game. I think he's got speed. He's direct. He has an eye for goal. He can score a variety of goals. And more than anything, his determination and attitude is one to watch.
Yeah, Jofarsson, 21 years old. From Iceland, his dad played at Coastal Carolina. I followed his footsteps, came over to Duke, had been in a professional club in Iceland, playing at the U23 level and then the second division level. The club he came from produced Alfred Finn Bogason and Gylfi Sigurðsson. So, I mean, look, there's not that many clubs in Iceland, I'm sure, and it's a small population base, but that's a decent track record. 15 goals, led the nation. He was a three-time All-American. Basically, all the different publications said, yeah, you're first-team All-American. Here you are. And he was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year. He was also, we might remember, or you at home might remember, the viral video he was a part of. You might remember in the NCAA tournament, UCLA-Duke. Duke scores in the 88th minute, 2-1 lead. They're going to win. And Yilfarsson rolls behind the goalkeeper and fakes the dive, then gets in front of the goalkeeper, shows him how he should have dove, and then takes a shove from the UCLA defender, stays down, it turns into a whole mess, and goes viral. So he's got personality, no doubt about that, and certainly a cutting edge in front of goal. Any other names you guys would throw out there? I mean, Kip Keller's one that I keep hearing as a center back out of St. Louis, a sophomore, 6'3", 21 years old. Basically, like, you're looking, you would think at, I don't know, maybe like a Tim Parker type of mold. People keep saying center back in this draft is what they like. Any thoughts on Kip Keller and where he could go and what this year, this draft class is for St. Louis?
I mean, in the history of the super draft, you almost never go wrong taking the best domestic center back as high as you possibly can. Whether he has national team upside or not, he certainly looks to have MLS starter upside at the very least. And guys like that coming through the draft have a very rich history of panning out. And that is the direction I would go if I was building a team, because I don't want to take wild swings in the draft. I don't need to find a 15 goal scorer or a 10 assist guy here. I need to find the solid foundation, and Keller to me looks like that guy. And I imagine that in, you know, Cincinnati right now, they are just keeping their fingers crossed that this kid falls pass number one, and then they could take him with the second pick, because it would just be such a no-brainer for a team that just hasn't gotten anything right in defense for the entirety of their MLS existence thus far.
I think I agree with Doyle. I'd be shocked if he fell past two. I think Cincinnati should be going St. Louis either way, because if it's not him, it should be Patrick Schulte. Why would you not take a goalkeeper, domestic player, generation Adidas for a team that has spent how much international capital over the last few years on goalkeeper? I get they brought in Alec Khan, and I think that's the right move. But Alec Khan isn't a difference maker over the next few years. So you have Alec Khan now to be your starter. Bring in a guy that you can develop, that you can get there to that next level. And then I think a guy like Huseini Buda could be the best player out of this draft, but it has to be the right team. And I think that's one of the tough things that teams are dealing with. And Michael, we talked about it last year with Calvin Harris and FC Cincinnati, of like, we think he's a great player.
Yeah.
He probably wasn't the right pick for FC Cincinnati. If he falls in the draft, it's not really an indictment on him. It's an indictment on the international status and what type of player you are. But you look down the draft board, and I think Houston at four and then Dallas at six is where I would look at a guy like Buda, where they have international spots, they can give him playing time, and they want attacking talent out of the draft.
Yeah, I think for players coming out of college, you need to be fortunate enough to be drafted by teams that play young players, that have a track record of playing young players. Expansion teams tend to give you a great chance, because you don't know where a team like Charlotte, you don't know how these guys that you've gotten, especially the foreign guys, are going to pan out. Charlotte's gone foreign heavy in their attack. However, you still need to gamble on one of these young international players and young college players in particular. And I agree with you that Buda, talent, pure talent wise, has ton of upside. But I don't know, there's just something about Yilfarsson, of his cutting edge. And take the viral video out, that I watched that a bunch of times. That I mean, who does that? Good for him for doing that. But to survive as a young player in MLS, you are leaving the green pastures of college soccer, where you're the man, and you're going into a grown man's world. I learned that the very hard way. I remember preseason, there was almost a target on my back, and I came into camp with the Jesse Marshes, the Ante Razovs, the Zach Thorntons, guys who have been there, done that in the league, and are doing it at the next level in their careers, coaches. And it, there is no love lost. They say welcome the hard way by kicking you, picking on you. And you know, it's a different era in MLS, but you know, these guys are going to have to be tough. And I think Jofferson's attitude is going to be a difference maker for him.
Dude, you got dropped into the snake pit.
Yeah.
Into the Lions. Then. Yeah, Jesse Marsh.
There was 97
Jesse and Ante are like, number 9 overall pick, Mike LaHuda. All right, let's see what you got, buddy.
Yeah.
There are two goalkeepers here that a lot of people are paying attention to in the Generation Adidas class. One is, of course, Patrick Schulte, who you mentioned, Dave, out of St. Louis. The other one, who has just done incredible things, is Roman Celentano out of Indiana. He's the only two-time Big Ten defender, goalkeeper of the year. He had crazy numbers in college. He's got the frame, 6'3". He's kind of a late bloomer. Came into his own when he got to Indiana. He's been on this path for a long time, has always dreamed of this. Take like many European trips first to just go see what it was like. Then it's a train. His last trip, I think, was with Sporting in Portugal, in Lisbon. So he's another one to watch if you're looking for a goalkeeper off the jump. And then the other guy I would say, and we'll get to more on Buda in a second because his story is incredible. Isaiah Parker seems to be one that a lot of people are watching. And I think 5 or 6 of these 8 come from MLS Next Academies, by the way. Parker came out of FC United, played at St. Louis, had a big freshman year for them, 3 goals and 7 assists. He's a high school wrestler, giving me Charlie Davies vibes on that front. What do you think of Isaiah Parker, Michael?
He's a young man who is very quiet. When you first meet him, you don't see the fire. You don't see the things that coaches are raving about and people are intrigued by. But he's got versatility. He can play multiple positions. He can attack as a winger, and he can also defend as a wing back. And there are teams in MLS that play 3-back systems. I think of the Nashvilles that operate with wing backs. So he could be a commodity there. But he really comes alive, and his tenacity that he gets from wrestling comes alive when he steps across the white lines. He becomes a totally different person.
Any other names on the GA list that you guys like? We have, you know, different guys, a freshman midfielder, a winger out of University of Pacific, Eric Centeno. You've got Ben Bender out of Maryland, who's had a good career in the Big Ten.
Bender will be interesting. It's one of those players where he was the best player on the field in college. He could be an attacking player. Where does he line up at the next level? Technically, he's there. And so I think for a lot of teams on a GA deal, worth bringing him in. But is he an 8? Is he a 6? Do you find him as an inverted winger? I think there's different ways he could be played. And I think it'll be an interesting, as we've talked about, where does he land? Like, with the right team, he could be a great MLS player. With the wrong team, he could be out within a year.
Yeah, it's a fit thing. We keep talking about that, but it really does matter. What coach, what system, what approach you end up in. We had talked a lot sort of leading up to this, Michael, about the West African influence here. And I think maybe we start with Osini Buda on that. Coming from Burkina Faso, he came through Right to Dream. He has just an incredible story. And he seems to be the sort of guy that is taking it a little bit bigger than just me, my career. He's making it, he has a perspective, I think, that is, I don't know, it's surprising in somebody who's 21 years old of any background. Tell us what you know about Usini and his background, and then also just sort of the West African influence on this draft.
Well, it's been amazing what's been really the legacy that's being left by some of the players that have come ahead of him through Right to Dream and BlackRock now. And Africa has always been, especially West Africa, has always been a soccer hotbed and a soccer pipeline. Typically, those players end up going to Europe, but now, through these vessels, they're coming through the call system and coming to MLS. He's on the field. He's a rock star. I mean, silky smooth operator, can change the game and just put the game on any terms that he wants. He can create the goal. He's listed as a forward, but I think at the next level, he'll be a winger, can play underneath the striker. Just gives you just a plethora of skill sets. He has a nose for goal, but he can also dish out the final pass. And off the field, whenever you come across a young man who really thinks about the community, thinks about the larger story, and never forgets where they came from, that's an asset. Because in the locker room, you need team players. And when you can compile or couple talent with leadership and servant leadership like that, that you've got a gem of a player.
So Right to Dream, I know you've heard that. you know, whether it be David Akam or Emma Boateng or Emma Tumwasi, who just signed a new contract with Dallas and came through the super draft. Abu Dunladi was a number one overall draft pick there. Other guys, I think we talked about, did we talk about Isaac Atanga? I know we talked about Calvin Harris, but Atanga came through Right to Dream, but then he was a signing. Yaya Boa, who the Crew just signed, he's out of Right to Dream. A bunch of other guys through the super draft. Edward Opoku, Etua Henne, you know, up and down this list coming through this his academy. And then BlackRock is interesting too, Dave. Like, and also, by the way, Millbrook School, because Opoku came from the Millbrook School. What do you think of the pathway here that he's taken, that Buddha has taken from Right to Dream, well, Burkina Faso to Right to Dream, and by the way, as an 11-year-old leaving his home to go to Right to Dream, Millbrook School, Gatorade Player of the Year, now to Stanford, and now to MLS?
Yeah, so the Right to Dream structure is heavily balanced around your education, right? It is it's a soccer academy in Ghana, but every player has a responsibility to go to class, to be involved. And that has created a pathway for colleges to say, well, we can guarantee that we can get these players into our schools, because that's one of the tough parts about international soccer is you have all these different exams that you have to take if you come from overseas. It's kind of one of the reasons we haven't seen as many players from Asia. They have to pass English exams. And if you don't go to school in English, it's kind of a struggle for a lot of players. So the Right to Dream has created this pipeline, and a lot of it goes straight to Manchester City, and they own a team now in Scandinavia. But there has been a clear path of, well, if you have the grades, here's an opportunity to go to the U.S. And then what BlackRock's been able to put together up in New England is they are basically an MLS pro academy without an MLS team. And so they resident players from all across the country and all across the region, Jacob Schaffelberg, who obviously is a TFC homegrown, came from Canada to play for them, as well as these Right to Dream players. And they're able to create a pro environment for them to train in. And then they use schools in the area to be able to educate them. And some of the best prep schools in the world are in that area, to be able to bring those players in, get them the education they need, and get them to the college level or straight to the pro level. In the case of Jacob Schaffelberg, Jack Harrison was really their first player in their first class. Zico Lewis broke his goal scoring record like a year or two later. And now they have a USL2 team as well that they can cycle teams up to. I think it's really cool. And it's one of those things, as I said, this country, this region's too big. There's got to be more than one way. And as great as MLS is doing with MLS Next and MLS Next Pro, we all know the ecosystem is larger than just MLS. And BlackRock, I think, is one of the really cool projects that's going on.
All right, we will talk more about this on the stream on Tuesday and introduce you to all these players. A ton of awesome features in production right now as well. I want to get your bet from all three of you. Who's the player most likely to, quote-unquote, make it? You can bet big, like Daryl DK Tejon big, or you can bet solid, like, you know, Alistair Johnson. I mean, that's a home run pick for somebody, but MLS starter solid. Who would you bet on, Doyle? Who's your guy?
Kip Keller. It wouldn't surprise me if he followed in the footsteps of what Jack Maher's doing in Nashville. Like, he barely played in year one. Year two, by middle of the season, he was starting center back and looks the part of a guy who will be a high-level starting center back in MLS for a decade. And that's if he doesn't improve at all from here on out. If he does improve another level or two, talking about a guy who might, you know, be sold to a European team for $5 million. And I'm not saying that that is what Keller is going to do, but I think that is a very high probability outcome for him. And I would bet on that before I would bet on any other individual specific outcome from anyone else in this class.
Michael, who's your guy?
Ooh, we were talking about it before the show, and I've been doing roulette in my brain of three guys that I was going to say for this, but a guy that I think really impressed and his stock rose in the second half of the NCAA season, Jack Lynn for the Fighting Irish. There's not many forwards and attacking depth in this class, but Jack Lynn, he brings something that a lot of these players don't have on the attacking side, physicality. To be a striker, to be an attacking player and a domestic attacking player in Major League Soccer, you got to bring something else that makes you stand out in the draft. And he is a physical force. He's got speed. He's got goals. And consistency is what he's going to need to bring to the next level to be an impact. But I could see him being an impact sub and a guy who gets a couple starts for teams that really thrive on physicality, a la a Nashville. And I've said them a couple times. So Nashville, if you're listening to this, listen to me, draft him.
Look, Miguel Berry was a guy who came through the draft recently, made a big impact in sort of that same way, not an American, but did that. Of course, Brian White's the one we talked about all last year, who's a draft pick that's sort of shown that side of himself. What about you, Dave? Make a bet.
I'll give you two. One generation Adidas is Isaiah Parker. One of the things, and Doyle mentioned what's been successful, has been wingbacks and fullbacks coming out of the draft. And for some players, it's adjusting. I think Parker, if he goes to one spot, yeah, maybe he gets an attacking role and he is good enough to succeed there. If not, you kind of have that. Every coaching staff's going to look at him and say, well, let's bring him in. Let's see what he does. I think you're sort of seeing it with Griffin Dorsey right now of like, we see the physical profile. Let's roll him out there and see if he is a wing back. Let's see if he is a fullback. And so I think Parker's going to get shots because of that. And then the other one for me is Tani Oluwaseyi, coming out of St. John's. I got to watch him a ton in his college career. He's a beanpole of a center forward, but his feet make him look like a number 10, and he's Canadian. So when you look at Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver having to make a draft pick, he makes a ton of sense, and he can play a lot of different ways, outside in a 4-3-3, inside as a center forward, below a second striker, whatever it is. I think he's got the talent to play in MLS, and for Canadian teams, he's kind of has that extra incentive. I wouldn't be surprised if he went in the first round to one of those three.
Little sleeper there. You have any sleepers, Doyle?
Jeez.
I mean, you put down Mo Omar on the rundown. I'm just saying.
All right, yeah, I wasn't looking at the rundown. Mo Omar is my choice as a sleeper. I think I was napping right there.
Yeah,
I don't even know.
I've
if
seen
he counts
some as... retweets coming through from you while we've been recording this show. Just saying, just see boy. A couple.
I don't even know if he counts as a sleeper, right? He played at a big program with Notre Dame. He was in the TFC Academy. Maybe TFC take him as high as number three, but he's not a GA kid. So, he looks the part. When he gets on the ball, he is silky smooth. He's huge. He's like 6'3", 180. So he can kind of like ragdoll guys in central midfield. There are quickness issues. There's always pace of play issues for guys who play in central midfield, jumping out of college. But I do think that he'll find a way to stick. And at worst, you can try to turn him into a center back. And that is a thing to remember.
Is that his future?
It might be, right? Like, he's not as athletic as Aaron Long was. But I remember when Aaron Long was in the draft, I remember a lot of people saying, like, this guy's just going to be a center back in 3 years, and it'll be worth it to take him. And it took him a little longer than 3 years, but it was worth it. And I've heard some of the same stuff about Mo Omar.
I think he's a Black Rock kid, isn't he? And also a Berkshire School kid, which is Jack Harrison's prep school. I believe he's a Black Rock Berkshire kid.
Berkshire. Yeah, big run Berkshire, of the, not Berkshire. Shire.
Whatever.
Oh, what? It's not. We're not.
It looks,
in
like,
the
it looks
Hobbit,
like the
man.
Shire. It looks like the Shire. Jeez. Right? Yeah. I was going to say Gryffindor producing a lot of press. I don't know. My pop culture is very poor.
Weeby's just such a Midwest guy.
I know. Michael, you had a good sleeper as well on the center back side.
Yeah, I think you got to go with the champs, the defending national champions, Clemson Tiger. So many of their players that have come through, they've really become a force in terms of producing talent and being a force in college soccer in the last 5-6 years. And a guy that was instrumental for them, I saw him in the Final Four, watched him throughout the season, doesn't get enough credit, is Oscar Ahrgren. He's Swedish. He takes up an international spot potentially. That has to be sorted out, you know, through the league mechanics. But I think he's a guy who's worth the gamble. He is composed on the ball. He can play between the lines, thread the needle, kickstart your attack if you're a team that wants to play the ball on the ground. He's deceptively fast, and he's got good size. And, oh, yeah, he's got an eye for goal. For a center back, especially coming from a different country, he's that prototypical Central European, very technical, reads the game well. And when he needs to get stuck in, he will surprise you. He's deceptively strong. He's built kind of in that lanky frame, but he can bring the lumber when needed. So I was impressed with him throughout this year.
So you mentioned international spots, and that's going to be a theme for any team as they make selections. Like, what do we have to do to get him on our first team? But we're now in a new era, so to speak, with MLS Next Pro. Dave, how do you think that that is going to affect the way teams draft? I don't think we know the specifics as it pertains to, hey, if I draft this guy as the, I'll say New England Revolution, do I have his MLS Next Pro rights? I don't think that you would. We already see, for instance, Sporting Kansas City and their MLS Next Pro team going and signing preliminarily college players. Some of these guys will have a choice to make, and their MLS rights might be locked up with someone else, and maybe that's a future transaction. We'll have to see as those rules and the roster regulations come down. How do you think MLS Next Pro impacts both the way the clubs are thinking, but maybe more importantly, how the players are thinking? Because this gives them an opportunity to be, you know, under an umbrella and have a little bit of time to do what we keep saying they need, which is to develop.
Yeah, I think it creates opportunity for the players. I think when you go in, it's less, I have 3 weeks to earn my job going into preseason, and it's, I know that I'm someone who's going to be around and they have a plan for me. And for the clubs, I think it's, you can sort of go back to best talent. You're not really drafting based off position of need. It really is, who do we project being the best player? And then we can bring them into our system, and then we've got time to let them find their feet and figure it out. So I think it takes a ton of the pressure off, and Doyle mentioned the MLB and NHL, and that's sort of what you see with those, is like, it doesn't matter who my pitchers are now, because in 3 years, this player is going to be a great player, and my whole world will look differently. And I think that's to the benefit of the players. And when you look at MLS Next Pro this year, I can say, as someone who's covered USL a ton over the last few years, and especially a lot of the two teams, you need just a level of physicality sometimes. And as good as some of these young players are, if you roll out 11, 17-year-olds, they're going to lose, and it's going to be tough for them. And so draft picks matter, and draft picks, I think, will be huge to the successful MLS Next Pro teams. That doesn't mean winning all the time. It means the clubs that have the best development through their MLS Next Pro will be ones that are able to stabilize those teams with draft picks that can be important, and with veteran free agent signings. We've seen Josh Yarrow, it sounds like, is already going to sign for St. Louis and be one of those players. But draft picks can be a huge part of that, because while they're inexperienced at the pro level, sometimes you're looking at 21, 22, 23-year-olds. And as Michael's talked about, international players who have been in pro environments, who have been in pro academies, and some have already played at the first team level in countries outside the U.S.
What do you think these players are thinking, Michael? I mean, you talked to a bunch of the combine. Is this something that's on their radar?
Absolutely. It ups the ante if you're a college soccer player, because it's almost like passing through the eye of a needle. The old way the draft used to be done, where you were competing against Generation Adidas, before that Project 40, so kids coming out of residency, and college soccer players, and the best of the best were going through mostly the college system. And now in the next iteration of the MLS draft system and soccer as a whole under the MLS banner, this has been a long time coming. If I'm a college soccer player, I'm chomping at the bit, because now more eyes are seeing you. And I think of international soccer when I think of this. So this is a World Cup year, and then 2 years from now, you're going to have international tournaments, etc. When you have such international heavy rosters for most MLS teams, when, as these players get better, as they get sold, or if they have to go represent their national teams, you're going to need to count on your domestic players. Rather than just going through the normal draft where, yeah, you draft a guy 3 weeks, he's not up to snuff, and then he's off to USL, and then you don't really have access to him potentially. Now this player is still in-house. He's still part of your club. So as that player develops, his value becomes that much more down the road. Say injuries happen. Now you're getting a player who knows the philosophy of the club, who's ingrained in the system, and then you can bring him up just like a farm system or feeder system. So I think in a few years' time, we'll be looking back at this and saying this was one of the best investments Major League Soccer's made.
I'm very curious to see how the roster building goes. I mean, we're going to learn a lot, as all these teams are going to learn, because right now it does feel a little bit Wild West. That's probably not fair, because all the administrators and all the GMs and all the coaches have an understanding, are working towards something. But this is the first, and you're going to have to see all these rosters get filled up rather quickly. It'll be interesting to see how the Super Draft plays a role in that. Remember, Tuesday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, that's when the coverage starts. MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. The MLS Super Draft 2022, presented by Adidas. The draft actually starts at 3 p.m. Eastern, but you'll want to be there at 2:30. Got some great features put together. We'll be rolling around the entire country. You know, David, Katie, Seeley, and Jillian on site, plus all those live cameras with a bunch of draft picks to see how they react to this life-changing moment. We're going to end with this. It's head-to-head, baby. Five-a-side super draft teams. Team Weeby, I'm at zero, against Team Doyle. I don't know if you want to be like Team Chaos or if you want to choose a different name from a combine pass. Do you remember any good ones? You got any of those, Dave? I know you've called a ton of those games. Any good previous combine team names that you want to throw out there?
Team Predator.
Predator,
team,
yeah.
Team Elite.
I think Gasman has an Adi Pure tattoo, I thought, right? But you can't show us where it is.
I thought that was a birthmark. I thought he was just born with that. Yeah.
One of the great moments in my life covering soccer was when Daniel Johnson annihilated everyone
so
in combine.
The look
on your face was like, this is the greatest performance in combine history.
Simon and I were losing our minds.
Everybody remembers.
So good.
You know who else remembers? Jay Heaps, because he's been playing for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah. All right. You want to give your five-a-side to face off against my five-a-side, Doyle? Hit us with it. Do we have to have goalkeepers here or no? That's going to change my team. Okay, no goalkeepers then. All right,
no goalkeepers.
So I, because of my superior knowledge of everything, I've decided to give myself a handicap, and my handicap is my five-a-side can come from only one MLS Super Draft.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say third and fourth rounds, and then you were going to just like
only one MLS. Can you guess what draft? Year?
Was it the year Justin Morrow and Steven Banisher were like the third?
Okay. No, well, that's a good call. It's a good shout.
That would have been in the low draft pick years. I feel like you're going to take 2015.
No, 2004. With the number one pick, Freddie Adu. With the number two pick, Clint Dempsey. With the number three pick, Ramon Nunez. With the number four pick, Ned Grabovoy. With the number five pick, Michael Bradley.
Darn it. That's a good team. You got the high-end talent. As Andrew says in the chat, God tier. All right, so I wasn't handicapping myself, but I think we may still lose this. But we got a chance. We're going, again, my
I just wanted to point out that I have, like, 400 national team caps and the next Pele in my team.
It's a pretty good team. I am a little bit lower on national team caps, but we got younger legs here because it is the quote-unquote modern era from 2015 on. Kyle Larin, soft feet, big body, play off him, finisher. We're there. Jack Harrison, EPL star. Christian Roldan, do it all, baby. He can do it all. Good in tight spaces, amplifies the skills of those around him. Since we don't have to have goalkeepers, I now have both Miles Robinson to just shut everything down and defend 1v1 against your team of national team cap stars. And then, replacing Andre Blake, because we don't have goalkeepers, Richie Larea, because we got the fire and the skill. We got guys from all over
and
the region.
And
the versatility. Yeah, we got some ballers in my team. So Larin, Harrison, Roldan, Larea, and Miles Robinson facing off against Freddie Adu, Clint Dempsey, Ramon Nunez, Ned Grabovoy, Michael Bradley. We'll put it on the Twitter account. You can vote for who you think is going to win. Who do you guys think wins from this? And I think I'm the underdog here.
I don't think your team even touches the ball, man. I think you're just chasing for 90.
I don't think that's true at all. All right. Team Michael Lahoud FC against David Goss. We going with the all-wake team first or your real team?
I'm going all-wake team.
What's the difference?
You're doing the all-wake? Do the all-time team, then give us the wake team for fun.
Okay, all-time team. Pulling up the Rolodex. Over here. Okay, so all-time team. I know we're saying no goalkeepers, but this guy, to kickstart it off, he's as good as a field player out of the back.
Oh, Nick, it's going
to
be Raimondo.
Nick Raimondo. He's been pretty much an additional field player. He's got silky smooth feet. Nick Raimondo And I'm going to bring the lumber with Carlos Bocanegra, part of that 2000 draft class, rewinding the clock. Need a leader in there. Unsung hero, Todd Donovan, because everything like that it. He touches turns to gold. Five MLS Cups. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he's a winner. Five aside, he's like, this is easy money, man.
Yeah, he's easy a winner. Money. And then I'm going to go a little fork in the road. Need a dribbler, need an X factor, and a guy that I grew up watching in the D.C. area, Santino Cruanta. It depends on which day you get Santino. This will be a good day on the five-a-side tournament, but he is he's a street baller. He's
feels like
so
the
good.
Right environment for him to thrive. Oh, yeah.
And then his twin, Deuce, Clint Dempsey. You can't do five-a-side without the Deuce.
Yeah.
He will be up top. Him and Santino, just let them do whatever they want because that's how it's going to roll.
That sounds pretty fun. Yeah. Where are you going, Dave? And then we'll let him do his wake team. You know, so as an extra time gift.
Yeah.
I also gave myself a restriction, and this is for all of you out there. While we are only streaming the first round, pay attention, because every one of these players was second round or later in the MLS Super Draft, and it was actually really hard. I had a goalkeeper in there as well. Sean Johnson, 51st pick in the Super Draft, but I'm taking that out now. So my team is stable with defenders, but with great feet. Aaron Long, 36th pick, and Jeff Cameron, 42nd pick in his draft. Then I need a goal scorer. Greatest in American history, Jozy Altidore, up top as a second-round pick. Now, he was 17th. He wouldn't be a second-round pick today, but he fits under mine. I needed a goal scorer. Otherwise, I was looking at Steven Lennart and Chris Rolfe and Devin
Sandoval. Wando's supplemental. So you
undrafted,
can't...
yeah.
Yeah.
And then I've got ball possession in the middle with Michael Bradley. And then the flair, the creativity that Michael LaHood just talked about with João Plata. 49th.
Wow. Plata. Yes.
Of Ecuador.
Yes.
João Plata. Wow.
Oh, God. That was worth it. That was absolutely worth it. I love it.
Graham Soucy was just off the list. Andy Dorman at 58th. Felt like a really good one. Jonathan Bornstein at 37th.
JB.
There's a lot of good picks late in the draft that that I just had to leave off. And then Ray Gattis, of course. He was originally on the team, but I couldn't go too defense heavy.
Those are good. Those are good five-a-side teams. All right, give us your wake team real quick, Michael. Right. We promised you, and I don't like to break promises.
I got
to
get my top hat on, my Demon Deacon top hat. So team Mike LaHood FC, the B team, Wake Forest all-time MLS draft team. We said no goalkeeper, so Will Hesmer, sorry, you would have made it, but, you know, defense optional. I'm going with players that bring MLS Cup experience. So Michael Parkhurst, former Rookie of the Year, National Team player, Atlanta United, recent retiree. Ryan Carroll, two MLS Cups.
Oh, classic.
Mr. Steady Eddie does the business. And then, you know, I'm going to give a shout-out to all my Canadian friends out there. Alistair Johnson, this kid is going to be a player that I think has a very bright future. He's just made the recent transaction to move north of the border. And I think he's going to make that World Cup team. I think Canada is going to be in the discussion for that. And then Ike Opara, you'll enjoy that one, Weeby.
Oh, big
Ike.
Dream
Opara, yeah. We're going defense heavy.
You know, half a mile down the road here.
Let me say that Wake Forest team had Ike, had you, had Marcus Tracy.
Marcus Tracy, Corbin Bone.
Corbin
Sam
Bone.
Cronin, Sam DeLuce.
How the hell did you not win? What happened?
We won one. Well, we won one.
You won one. Okay. For some reason, I thought you guys had won one. So, okay.
No,
didn't you win 07?
Yeah, 07, we won. We beat another SKC guy, Roger Espinoza's Ohio State. Yep. I remember Espinoza scored the first goal, and just he was a man on fire. Obviously, his career said enough about that. In hindsight, but Espinoza scored, and then Marcus Tracy had the greatest weekend of his life. He had 3 goals, 1 assist in 2 games to give us the national championship. So we had a heck of a team that translated very well to college. And, you know, there were quite a bit of guys that had a great MLS career and pro career, but just a phenomenal college team. And I didn't finish off my all-time Wake Forest draft team. I was going to put myself, but I already gave myself a shout out for the
combine. You were the best in the combine in 09.
So I'm not going to do that. But I mean, we're hedging all our bets on Jack Harrison. Just lump the ball up top. We're going to protect the goal. No goalkeepers, so we got to go defense heavy. And then Jack, do what you do for Leeds. Win us the tournament. Win us the game.
Hey, look, a lot of great super draft picks over the years, and more to come, we hope, on Tuesday. 2:30 p.m. Eastern coverage starts at MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. The draft starts at 3 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to host this thing. Devin Kerr, Michael LaHood on the desk with me. We got some good content coming from Matt Doyle. We've got Dave and Jillian and Katie and Seely on the ground. As I said, and I'm just not exaggerating this, I'm telling you, like, there are literally like 20 cameras around the country. Watch it on Tuesday. The season will kick off from there. We'll be back Thursday, and we'll run you all the way through to opening day on February 26th. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you haven't already, go check out the podcast we dropped Friday with all the news you might have missed during the holiday period. We will see you on Thursday, and for many of you, on Tuesday. Adios. Have a good week.